Welcome to the Justified Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Justified on FX. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 1, Episode 7, The Smoking Gun. Aaron, what'd you think about this episode?
Pretty good episode. You know, we've been following this gun. I mean, this is classic Justified, classic Elmer Leonard. We've been following this gun, pachinkoing all over the board. Who's got it? When they've got it, who gave it to who, and then Tomo gets his hands on it and just throws it out a window into the river, which is what was supposed to happen to it, what, way back in episode 2? And so now how do we take, what kind of situation has Raylan got himself into by the end of this episode? There's a couple things that I'm not sure is tracking, but I'm also not willing to take the show to task on it because, honestly, I've missed a couple things in the last few weeks. Completely forgot, a listener pointed out that Carolyn had instructed Trinnell to hide the gun from both Sweetie and Clem a few episodes back. So, of course, it wasn't there at the jukebox, and it wasn't underneath the bar. There's a couple of others, but it's like I don't know if everything absolutely connects. And also still I guess the implication of this judge book is it goes all the way to the top and like everyone who's anyone in Detroit is connected to it.
Seems like it. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I guess that's the big thing. I don't know that you can tell a federal officer, we're corrupt as fuck down here and doing whatever we want with evidence. What are you going to do about it? And actually that's something, you know, this book is originally about like, I think either Private Eye or an out of town detective passing through on vacation or something. You might be able to get away with doing that. Just some jurisdiction crap, but a marshal and a federal judge is killed over it. I feel like somebody is going to take a look at it. I don't know. What do you think of this episode?
I enjoyed it. I think, it's pretty obvious now. Maureen was the mole. Everybody had kind of predicted that. And I wasn't totally sure last episode. I thought there could be other explanations for the tip-offs. But yeah, we find out in no uncertain terms this time that she's definitely the mole. I guess I'm going to have to come to a compromise with Brill. I'm gonna have to stop calling him douche cop. This is my compromise. I'll stop calling him douche cop. He's still an asshole, but I'll use his real name. How about that?
I don't know why I have to back off of calling him a douche. He's still like not above
because of the points
people
he earns
up the river that don't deserve it. It's just he thinks in his gut that it's
thinks they do deserve it is the thing. But you know.
But he is not as big of a shitbag as Maureen, who will send an Afghanistan veteran, homeless Afghanistan veteran, up the river for a lifetime, lifetime ride for doing. But I don't know. Like,
just
fuck,
to
I feel
keep,
like
cover her own ass, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, she's
but
in this book, I'm sure.
I feel like Brill in real life wouldn't do this. I feel like he'd be like, yeah, fuck that guy. He burnt them girls, that dead girl's legs. He's going up
probably,
the river.
Probably.
You know?
But here he doesn't, and so he earns some points. So I'll call him Brill now.
That's
what he gets. That's
I'll
what he
still
wins.
Call him asshole, because I think that's where Raylan lands with it. He's just some asshole. You're not in the book, but you're just an asshole.
Yeah. And I really like the, let's call it a showdown between Raylan and Clem here. I think like the dialogue in that scene is really good. It's kind of the exciting stuff that I want to see from Raylan. I wish we got more of that, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, as a feedbacker at the end of the episode points out, this is consistent with Raylan's arc, you know? He started the show when Nona says, I think you're the angriest man I've ever met. And the season finale, she says, I think you're the most stubborn man I ever met. And he goes, well, that's an improvement from anger. Like, this is a less angry Raylan. Sure. I am shocked that we haven't seen his daughter again.
Yeah,
like I think they'll have another cameo, like they'll, you know, be looking at an ice cream cone on a bench in Miami or something at the end of next episode, but like I thought that would be the catalyst to kind of unleash old Raylan.
Yeah, because
yeah,
like it's
fucking
gonna be corruption, not threats to his family.
Yeah, I mean, Klim grabs his daughter, and I'm like, yeah, right, he's fucking weapons free, dude. But yeah, it's like I said, it's a really Elmore Leonard episode. It's really good, and I have no idea how Raylan's going to get out of this, because I feel like the Albanians are just going to kill Raylan, because they don't want to, but they know that he's a federal fucking officer, and you're just gonna blow someone's brains out and just be like, we're cool, right? You know, you're gonna not know all of our names and faces, and you're just going to, you know, not make this a big deal. They have to kill him. So like, Raylan's got to get out of here, get out of this somehow.
Yeah, unless Raylan gets to Klim first, he's pretty pissed off.
And what do we think about? I guess Carolyn's selling. If that's true, did Carolyn sell Raylan up the river?
I don't know about that. I think they might just be working on the same goal in different ways, and a lot like the meet that happened last episode, it just kind of didn't work out for Raylan.
This is two episodes in a row where Carolyn's shit is fucking up with the other people's shit, and the other people's shit would have been cooler.
Yeah, probably.
I like you, Carolyn. Stop fucking with the cool shit. Can we have something cool happen?
Yeah. Yeah, I think next episode something cool will happen. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, it better. It's been a minute. All the cool things have been done by Klim in the last few episodes, and I like that.
Yeah.
Also, a great lesson for young men. Don't simp. You can love women, you can celebrate women, you can support women. Don't you fucking simp for them. You simp for them. This is you invent a $10 million app and you get your brains blown out by some crazy redneck from Oklahoma when you start simping. That's what happens. That's where it leads.
Yeah, be more like Skinder. You know? He learned his lesson.
Yeah. He ain't gonna walk right again. Another simper. He's gonna walk with a limp the rest of his life.
But he'll never simp again. That's for sure.
Dude, I thought he might. I'm like, this
when he
guy.
Starts smiling and you know, sheepishly laughing. Yeah.
But no, he dug deep and found a stone cold Albanian deep within him, because he was not, you know, simp me once, shame on me. Simp me twice, you'll never simp me again, I think is what a great man once said. So don't be simping, guys. Don't be simping.
Yeah. I think that was Alexander Hamilton said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, maybe we should get into the recap, yeah?
Let's do it.
There ain't nothing in life that ever comes for free. That's why we have an ad break. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Home is wherever the podcast takes me. Welcome back to the Justified Podcast. We start off in Detroit, Michigan in 1988. It's a flashback to Sweetie playing jazz at a club. A young Carolyn sits near the stage and watches. And after his set, Sweetie goes outside. He's bullshitting with his friends. He tells him why Carolyn's with him tonight, which is her father, you know, had some bad luck. I think he probably killed himself. And so he's promised to babysit while her mom's out. And then he takes them all out to the husk of a building that eventually is going to be Sweetie's bar.
It's an interesting sketch of a scene. It kind of walks back a lot of what I thought about Sweetie last episode.
Oh, yeah? What were you thinking about Sweetie last episode?
The Sweetie was like, you know, not exactly mobbed up, but like street smart. Like a guy to be taken seriously by other serious men. When I talk about serious people, I'm talking about people who are willing to break the law and murder over it, right? Between Carolyn calling him a chump and seeing him kind of bullshit about being tough with his bandmates, it's like I feel like they're showing a guy who really wanted to be a flash musician and had all the tools to do it, got mixed up with the wrong crowd, and I don't know, wants to be gangster in the kind of same way Clem wants to be a blues musician, and neither one of them just quite got it.
Yeah, I almost wanted this to be a flashback to when he met Clem, because I want to know how he got into that life, right? Because he doesn't seem on that trajectory in this scene, but something is going to intervene.
I don't think they're ever going to come out and say it, but I swear that you're supposed to understand that Sweetie was like, goddamn, what's her fuck? This woman's name, Shelley?
Sandy?
Sandy, Jesus. The S and the Y. Sandy. I think the Sweetie was Sandy 1.0. They even got the S and the Y thing going.
Sure. Yeah.
I think Clem put the bisexual curve on Sweetie and just roped him in.
Mm-hmm. Saw him in the bathroom, saw him, got a glimpse of his tidy whitey. Simpson was like, oh, yeah.
No,
oh,
I mean,
yeah, tidy whitey man. I'm down.
You're being fun. But like, if you look at like, it seems like Sweetie does have a taste for flashy, good looking young men. And I think Clem is that. And like, I see, it's like, I did like when they were dancing to Kokomo, I'm like, that kind of gives you this kind of old, you know, old lovers kind of feeling. So because that's the only thing that makes sense to me. Like, what would turn his head? What would take him off of this trajectory?
Yeah. And we can, you know, guess all we want, but it'd be nice to see a scene that kind of told us that.
I think it's kind of cool because this isn't vital to the plot. I think it's kind of cool in the margins to let, you know, these stories kind of be up to whatever people want to believe. But I mean, because the story they've consistently told is Sweetie is a very nice guy who looks out for his community. They're not successfully telling me the story that he is a successfully tough guy. You know, he's not like a wise guy. He's not like a gangster.
Yeah.
And yeah, they almost got me there. But then again, it's like, I don't know why he sits across the table from another washed up dude that works for the bulldozer. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, this is like when Butch brokered peace with, what's his face from Pulp Fiction. You know, it's like sat down across the street from, Marcellus Wallace. You know, it's like, no, it wasn't that. It was an old washed up, maybe goon. with another old washed up goon accessory, and it wasn't exactly capturing the glory days, I guess.
Yeah, it's starting to feel like some of the other reasons he gave, like he just doesn't like hearing the way that people talk about him now, that kind of thing, might be more why he's still doing this stuff. He wants
a
name.
Yeah, get your respect back, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're something.
Yeah, but, you know, I think we learned a lot about his relationship with Carolyn in this episode, and I think that was important. So I'm glad we get this scene.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is how much she just worshipped him. Like,
how much responsibility he felt for her.
Yeah, kind of he's going to all these clubs, and she's got, apparently she's a 10, 11-year-old that appreciates jazz and thinks that's really cool. And she's just, you can just tell, she just thinks he's the coolest thing. Mm-hmm. And it really, you believe it when she shows up at the bar and she's just bereft, you know? She can't even, like, have an outburst. It's just, she's just worn out by it, and like she tells Clem, like, you killed the closest thing to a father I ever had. And these scenes, like, you know, they talked about it, but you got to see it in this cold open,
right? Then we're gonna fast forward 35 years, and Sweetie's dead. Raylan shows up at the scene of the crime, and a teary-eyed Carolyn says, "Sweetie was a chump. He was a chump. Is this because he worked a straight job as a bartender?"
Yeah, that's the I don't know, because like I'm not exactly sure how to parse that. There's part of it that is like, okay, when she says chump, it's kind of the same way that Sweetie talked about, like, maybe I'm tired of loaning my car out and it coming back with a scratch and people swear it was there before. That, like, he does get the shirt off his back, but maybe more so than it would be to be healthy. And this is like the, you know, him getting killed and getting burnt out over potentially an ex-boyfriend. I mean, that's some high, that's some first class simpery, honestly. So, yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to parse that too. And I think that's it, right? He was not carving his own path. He was kind of following Clem down Clem's path. And I think that's the jump part.
Well, and the fact that, like, I think the other thing is, because Sweetie could have done this the right way and testified and sent Clem away, but he didn't want to do it. Why? Because he didn't want to have that reputation. He didn't want to be seen as a snitch, a chump, a loser, right? And there's, like, some kind of bitterness, I think, to this delivery that, like, you know, you went around this whole way trying to do it your way, and, you know, now look. Are anyone going to remember you at all? You know, I thought there's a little bit of that there too, that he'd be kind of, by desperately trying to avoid becoming that thing, he kind of became that thing.
Gotcha. And then Raylan and Carolyn go up to Trinell's apartment. He's taking the loss pretty hard and wants to move to New Mexico, get away from people. Before he goes, though, he gives them Clem's gun. We were questioning whether Trinell survived the blast. Well, yeah, he did. It wasn't close enough to be killed. Yeah, it wasn't even close enough to be scratched up. Or
no,
harmed.
He was fine.
So, yeah.
Yeah, he was
just
fine.
Just rattled his cage a little.
Yeah. And I felt bad the second time I watched this where, you know, with tears in his eyes, he gives his gun over. It's like, are you sure you can use this and put this guy away? And Raylan's like, I am sure.
Mm-hmm. I like how they play it with the shirt, right? It's wrapped in one of Sweetie's shirts, and you're like, what is he doing? Is he just like, he goes over the drawer, gets the shirt out, and I think, like, is he mourning Sweetie? Is he gonna, like, give a, you know, monologue about how much Sweetie meant to him? And then he clunks on the table, and you're like, oh, okay, I see, there's a gun in there.
Yeah, it's like the fact that it's been a MacGuffin all season and they just throw it out the window. It's never not be. I laughed out loud when that happened, when he's like, oh, this murdered a weapon? Yoink! It's like,
well, it wouldn't have sank
on Raylan's
before.
Face too.
It just wouldn't have sank before, but now that it has all that emotional weight attached
right
to it, yeah,
right to the bottom.
yeah, and it was funny when he asked, you sure you can use this, when he's talking about a gun to Raylan. Raylan can always use a gun.
True.
Always. One way or another. Clem's pissed that Sandy sold his painting, and Sandy doesn't understand why he cares. You threw away a Stanley Garlick. He has no idea what that means. What an idiot.
No one has any idea what this means. This is the third, fourth straight week I've gone to Google on hands and knees, like the Oracle at Delphi, and said, what is Stanley Garlick? Stanley Garlick artist, Stanley Garlick painting. What is Stan? I think they made this up. I'm with Sandy. Who gives a shit about Stanley Garlick? This is like an epic troll.
Yeah. The only person who gives a shit about Stanley Garlick is David Cross. That's it.
I think it would be hilarious if this is an AI-generated name and piece of art just for them to thwart attempts for people to look for meaning.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because, like, I'm trained, man. I see a picture of a guy rowing a boat in a doctor office and Breaking Bad. I'm writing that shit down and making 5 minutes on a podcast about it. I see Don Draper catch a picture of fucking Ulysses or something fighting Perseus. I'm like, ooh, that's got to have some meaning. Stanley Garlick?
Yep.
Stanley Garlick is a garbage pail kid, as far as I can tell.
I love it. I love the way it's just like wholesale making this thing up.
There was a thread on Reddit about, has anyone tried Googling Stanley Garlick? And it's, yeah, like if there is a Stanley Garlick and he's real, would you please step forward and let us know? Justified@baldmove.com. Because it's kind of driving me crazy. I've never had this little luck at finding a cultural reference.
And then at the end of the scene, Clem leaves, you know, presumably to go get the painting back, but we'll see. Raylan asks Maureen to take Sweetie's gun to ballistics to see if it's the gun from the Judge Guy murder. Boy, in retrospect, this scene really sucks. not that the scene is bad, but like, God damn it. You're just putting it in the hands of somebody who's going to misuse it.
Yeah. And
and you see Brill just, like, looking over too in this scene. They walk by him a couple times and he's like eyeing Maureen and Raylan as they walk out of the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, is he the mole? Is he going to interfere in this? You know?
Yeah. What do you call that? He's like a bad cop, but he's not a corrupt cop. He's being a bad cop as a free agent on an amateur basis. No one's paying him. He's just, yeah, I fucking think you're guilty. And you didn't do these particular crimes, but you did some crime. But
yeah.
Yeah, so, I caught that on second watch too. The Brill was kind of clocking or something.
Oh yeah.
Some dirty deal going down here.
Yeah, it'll have a different context entirely by the end of the episode. And then Clem steals a car. He likes them old, apparently. Big and old is how he likes his cars.
The falling down ceiling was a nice touch. Like this, like he said,
was,
like,
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, you look at that cherry ride that he picked off in the pie, and now he's like, yeah, it's like one of those things where the ceiling's sagging. He's a tall dude with spiky haircut. I guarantee that stuff is just rubbing on it, driving him crazy. Mm-hmm. But was there something significant about that stone cube?
I don't think so. I think it was just meant to say, what's he going to do with this as they're kind of close up walking around with it?
It definitely gave me the Fugitive vibes. Like, is he going to cave Sandy Skull in with this? But no, I think he just busts a window open and that's it.
Seems like it. I think he likes those old cars because he can hotwire them. It's kind of his motif,
right? Well, he says
it's
about the tape system. But
yeah, I don't think so. I think it's about being able to hotwire these cars. Because you can't do that with like a 2023 Mitsubishi or something.
Yeah, but there's like three types of car, and I know Hyundai is one of them. Have you seen this? Where like the rates of these three particular make of automobile, I think it's like Hyundai, Kia, and something else, has just gone through the roof in major metropolitan areas because there is a known flaw that you can like pop these things open with like a cell phone and an app.
All right. Good.
So
wow.
he just needs to, you know, get into an all new Kia Sorento and now finding one with a tape deck.
Yeah, you're not gonna find that for sure. Maybe it's a combination. He likes that he can hotwire them and he also does like the tape deck.
Yeah.
I just couldn't help but think like this fits into his motif where he's like, ah, fuck Venmo. You know, I can't steal from people with Venmo. I can't hotwire these new cars. He's just outmoded, right?
Yeah.
And then Raylan goes over to pay Sandy a visit to warn her that he has Clem's gun, and it takes her a while to realize what that means. But Raylan points out the obvious, what Clem might do to her when he finds out that Raylan has the gun. And Sandy kind of breaks down at the end of this scene.
Yeah, because this is him killing Sweetie.
Yeah.
I think that's what really scared her, because, you know, he's like, well, you know, Sweetie's known him for a long time, and they've had this kind of like back and forth relationship. But Sweetie's important to him, and he would never kill Sweetie.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's killed Sweetie. You know, the man he swore, it's like, I'm never going to kill the guy who played with.
Yeah.
I can't remember if that was who exactly name checked. I don't think it's the same guy as the Big Ears comment, but
I don't think it's Miles Davis, but yeah, I mean, she realizes, you know, if he could kill Sweetie, he could do the same to me just as easily.
Yeah, he's known me a hell of a lot. We're a lot less important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then she says, I feel like I'm in big trouble.
I always enjoy Raylan, his reaction, his like depressed view of humanity reaction to, because he's trying to like get empathy. It's like, did you know that Skinder, the Law Garage, he's you permanently crippled him? Did you know that this has happened? You know, and like nothing but like Sweetie, someone important to her, she starts getting sad about it. You can always see like there's a flicker of disappointment in Raylan's eyes. Like, damn, people just aren't real to you. Like,
yeah.
Unless you've like shared their bed or had a drink with them, they're just like fucking NPCs to do whatever. I always say it's been kind of like, because I've been rewatching Justified in the background the last few months, and it's always something they always give a little reaction to Raylan, kind of like, ah, God, a little bit of him dies.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Sandy's outfit this episode?
I don't recall registering it.
I mean, she's super cute. She looks good about everything, but she's wearing like a bridal, like a floral bridal bra and like a slip. And I thought at first it's like, oh, Raylan caught her out of her shift and she's just, you know, wearing her underwear around, kind of a weird mismatched pair, but she wore that shit to the airport. It's a god awful outfit. Nothing. I mean,
she had
matches,
to leave in a hurry, man.
Good.
She was in bed. She had to go.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know whether they're supposed to just suggest, because I also noticed her hair's not as good the last episode or two, and I think that's deliberate. Like,
stress getting to her.
Yeah, it's a lot limper. She's not like, you know, spending as much time dolling it up. Maybe she only dolled it up when she had a mark that she was trying to make, but maybe she's just looking more bedraggled in general, because she is. I don't know.
Yeah, could be. I haven't really noticed it, but that would make sense. Then Carolyn goes home to find Clem in her house, and he, depending on your point of view here, he either tells her the story of how he murdered his mother and buried her body, or how a tornado carried her away.
I told you that tornado story is coming back.
It came back, yeah. And nobody believed it in the first place. A tornado does not carry your mother away. This is not Twister.
They only carry fathers away, hanging on to a tornado shelter door. That's the only time they can get sucked up in there.
I believe that he killed his mother and buried the body. Because of a later scene with Carolyn, where we start to understand why he might say, I thought you would understand. Because that's what he does in this scene. He tells her the story thinking she'll like sympathize with him, but we don't really know why, and then I feel like later in this episode we'll figure it out.
It's just a really, there's a lot of interesting details. Like, this thing is shot really creepy. It looks like a storm's coming. I notice there's a Hawaiian shirt blowing on the line.
Okay.
Like, is that his dad? Was that her mom's John's? Is like, where did he, you know, he's picked up off off the line after he shot his mom and never looked back. But the way he described, like, I wanted the last thing she saw before I slipped 3.5 inches of cold steel down her throat. I'm like, dude, holy Oedipus, what the hell's going on with this guy? But yeah. I don't know, it could be, I got a very clear Heath Ledger Joker vibe where he just is saying whatever he thinks will say to fuck with people. I don't think any of this shit's true.
It's possible. It's certainly possible.
Do you think we'll get a definitive, or is this going to be something like,
I think this is it,
Joker, where who the hell knows, which is the real story, if any of them.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's all we're going to get on that. We'll see. So she says, you know, fuck your mother, fuck you, I don't care about any of that. Clem slams her against the fridge and threatens to return anytime he wants.
That's a really convincing stage choking. Mm-hmm. You know, she really sold the grab of his arm and throwing her head. It's like, when he slammed her against that fridge, holy hell, that was some good, that's a good stunt work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
also
scary.
Carolyn coming home in her athletic wear. You still don't see what Raylan's seeing here.
I mean, look, she's trying to keep it tight.
Trying. All right. Defying gravity, but all right.
Look, athletic wear goes a long way. You stuff me into some sausage casing athletic wear, I look pretty good too. But without it, I'm a mess.
Yeah, you're about a third of the woman that Carolyn is out here, what you're wearing, so.
Fair.
We gotta get out of this town alive. We'll be right back.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcasts, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. A fresh shot of bourbon. We're back with more Justified.
All right, Clem goes to see... No, not Clem. Sandy goes to see Lol Garage in the hospital. You don't want Clem going there. She tries to apologize, but he won't accept it. And he tells her she's a dead woman, so she rushes out of the hospital.
Yeah, that was ice cold. Cause he really sold me on that. He's gonna fuck. She's gonna rope him in. This guy, he's shameless. Can't help himself.
No, it's good.
What a desperation move by Sandy too. They really sold
you. I'm
gonna
go to
my
mark
God.
And try to patch things over so that I can get some protection here.
That I put in the hospital like 2 days ago?
Uh-huh.
I was trying to think of how many day-night cycles we have. It's pretty bad. And she's working it, man. She is working it so hard. Mm-hmm. And I think he convinced all of us, but he's like, you are a dead woman. Oh.
Yeah, you fucked up. You know, you can't come back from that. You try and steal from a man, you get him paralyzed, and now you want him to protect you and run away with you? No.
Yeah, his dialogue was really funny. That you have broken my heart and my leg.
Yeah.
it's really funny.
Nah, he's great. I would have liked to see a little bit more of, you know, the Skinder we knew before he was damaged physically and emotionally, but, you know, I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, he's got like Jesse Pinkman energy. Seems like mm-hmm. a lot. You know, he's got money in his pocket. He's a lot of fun.
Totally. Then Carolyn calls Raylan to tell him what happened with Clem. And that's just a really quick scene there. And then we go over to Sandy packing her shit when Clem gets back. She hides her bag and covers by telling him how sad she is that he never let her hear his songs. Promises to let her hear it. Then he lets her have it. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I thought it was just really interesting how they showed Sandy, like, almost like the way she acted. She moted like throwing up in her mouth when he penetrated her. Like, this is just extremely degrading. And
yeah, whatever.
But the thing is I was like, at first I was like, there's no way he buys this. I think
but then she
did.
Made it personal. Yeah. It was the exact totally right play with him. Anything else here does not work.
So does Clem simp a little bit? Or is he just desperate for someone to approve of his music?
It's the latter, for sure. I don't think he gives a shit about Sandy, but it's somebody telling him, I want to hear your music.
Do you think that he thought she was capable of this kind of level of sophistication against him? Because maybe that's...
Probably not.
Because, like I said, it seemed an obvious thing. He comes in, the vibe's mm-hmm. off. She already sold his painting. She's kind of scared. I would think that she'd be trying to rabbit. Yeah, clearly, like, you know, if he looked a little bit, she could see he's in the middle of packing, and he just switches to this, which I thought's like, well, that's some way you could be, like, ice cold if, like, you suspect him, and then you're just going to take advantage of him anyway. But the way he reacted to waking up and finding her gone, no, that was genuine.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's a simp for his own self-image as a jazz musician.
Self-simping, yeah, that can be dangerous too.
Yeah,
in your own supply.
Yeah. Then Raylan goes to Carolyn's to talk about it. What happened with Clem? She tells him about a time that I think it's her father physically abused her, and Sweetie taught her to defend herself.
No, then, it's some dude at school.
Is this some dude at school? Okay.
Said Dwayne. I think she said, Dwayne, some kid from school.
Oh, some kid from school. All right. Well, then that totally blows up my theory about what she was thinking in a previous, or what Clem was thinking in a previous scene. Then she asks how they're going to use the gun to get Clem. Let me ask you this then. Let me go back to that scene when Clem says, I thought you would understand about me killing my mother. What the hell is he? Why is he on that?
Why
would she ever understand? I thought it was that she had a physically abusive father, and that, you know,
yeah, she's not.
It because his mother sucked, but like,
yeah, and she's never. Has she ever talked shit about her mom? Like, my mom sucked, or just she's always like glorified.
I don't remember.
Like, he was my dad. That's what she was like, and she says, "Mom called, you know, school called, mom."
Yeah.
Yeah, I
thought Sweetie had told her all about it. Maybe it was just the bully thing, you know, like some kid at school sucked, and so she would understand that way. But that's different than killing a parent. That's way different.
Well, maybe Carolyn. Yeah, that's the other thing. Is like maybe you're supposed to understand that Sweetie has told some of these stories to Clem when they were together. And
for sure,
you know,
I think.
But
that's a far cry from what Clem claims to have done. Killing his mother.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't let anybody tell you that it's equivalent. Beating up a bully and killing your parents, I don't think that's the same.
Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't Manziel's prints on this goddamn gun? There might be other people's prints on them, but like Carolyn at the end of this tells Raylan, so now you got the murder weapon, how are you going to put Manziel's prints on it? And Raylan kind of looks like shocked / concerned. Why?
I don't know.
Like, I think we said, like, so the chain of custody, as I remember, Clem had the gun. in his hand, you know, it was like fully palming it, shot the judge, shot the judge's assistant, never showed us cleaning off the prints, went up not carefully, just had the gun palm, put it up into the attic. Then he sent Sandy to get it. She's possible. So it's like her prints are on there too. She didn't throw it. She gives it to Sweet. Sweetie finds it. His prints,
his
probably
prints
on
are on it. Trinell's prints
like,
are on it.
Trinell's prints probably on it. I don't know why Manziel's wouldn't be. Like, are they worried that like so many people have handled it that it's just going to be a partial print, or it's not going to stick, or maybe he thinks that Manziel's smarter than he is and he did do it? But like, that was one thing that a little bit confused me.
Yeah, I'm a little confused by that too. I don't know. I was taking it as like a more poetically saying prince, but in that context, it's silly to use it that way. It's more like you would want if you're trying to be poetic about it, like how are we going to put this on Clem? You wouldn't want to say prince.
What's wild is that like it seemed to disturb Raylan. Like, oh, you know, like, am I going to fabricate evidence? But it looks like the end of the episode that was his like, you're either going to draw that, well, he's just going to kill Clem. So it's
like it, yeah.
I was like, you know, there's a lots of different ways you can be bad cops. So Raylan just two episodes preach about not executing people in the street, that your job is to, and now he's like seven, he's like, you know, fuck this guy, I'm gonna get him to draw on me, and then it's gonna be a loaded gun and it'll be justified. I would love to see the official report on how this gun got out of evidence on a hotel bar table and got in a shootout in the middle of this Ramada Inn at the airport. I would love to see Raylan write that up, but that's, yeah. So it's like one of those things where it's like, there's a sliding scale of, you know, poor police work / corruption in a justified universe. And Raylan's not completely on the side of angels.
Oh, no. No, he'll go outside the law every once in a while. He'll easily bait a criminal into drawing on him.
So it's like, what's like the difference in him and Brill are degrees. Like, they're both willing to cook something if they know a guy, but like, just Raylan is a little bit more discerning about that.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. It's weird because like, I felt like in the first episode they were going to maybe make a different statement about, you know, Raylan and cooking the books and falsifying stuff in this era, but nah, it doesn't seem like it. They're just going to play a little bit of lip service, and then just Raylan's going to be Raylan.
Yeah, I think he wants to be better, you know? He doesn't want to do this stuff, but the situation calls for it right now, you know? This guy's getting off scot-free, somebody's protecting him, and it just pisses him off.
Philosophically, I don't have a problem with Raylan killing Clem. It's just in real life, there's so many examples of people being dead sure about things and they just weren't at all. There's people on death row getting exonerated because of new evidence and stuff going on. It's a process fraught with peril.
I always talk about that in terms of fiction. Like, we have seen Clem in cold blood murder people. He absolutely 100% deserves whatever justice he gets from Raylan inside the bounds of the law or outside.
And by the end of this episode, he's a psychopath. I don't think there's a way to redeem him. Like, he's just something. No. His empathy circuits are fused out or something.
Yeah. Yeah. He almost takes pride in it. But there's a far cry from real life vigilanteism, right?
Yeah. Batman's only cool because he's the greatest detective in the world and he's always right.
Yeah.
In the real world, he's just some crazy rich asshole beating up people. If with a probably, I don't know, 73% success rate on being criminals versus innocent. So
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the next morning, Raylan goes to the station early and finds a minor media circus. He finds out that Maureen arrested Daryl Woods, the homeless vet who was questioned on the night of Judge Guy's murder, which surprises him and Carolyn, to say the least.
Yeah, and you know, they established that this guy is, I wouldn't say innocent in a routine. He was high on PCP, did some fucked up shit to the body, but you know, he's an indictment of the way the system treats homeless people and people with mental illness and drug addiction more than it is I think this poor guy, and the fact that he's possibly going to serve double life sentences or even do the death, you know, I don't know how they roll in Michigan. Seems like they repealed the death penalty a while back, but you know, killing a federal judge is pretty serious business.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Mo just comes across as the worst sort of villain in this.
Yeah, especially when Raylan confronts her about it here in a bit.
I'm a little bit bothered remorseless. That I feel like the actor gave a completely different performance as bad Mo than she did as good Mo.
Mm-hmm.
Like the last time we saw good Mo was killed by dark Mo in that staircase when Raylan handed her the evidence.
Oh yeah.
Because she kind of turned into a sneering villain. Even in this interrogation, we've seen how she interrogates people before.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's way more aggressive, way bigger an asshole.
You pointed out, I think last episode about, what she said to Raylan, like, how do you make all this work? She says, you just pretend.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess I prefer my villains a little bit more like Mags Bennett, where it's like, she was never different mm-hmm. when she was doing good or evil. She's always trying to do good by her rights, you know, do good for the community, mostly but to her family.
Mm-hmm.
But like it didn't seem like it was like two separate, like, you know, when she's dealing an apple pie and I feel like, oh my God, this is a completely different Mags than I've ever seen before. And her whole demeanor is different. The Mo thing, it's like, it's a little bit like the mask came off, but you're right. They set her up as someone who was deliberately being false.
Yeah, yeah.
And not authentic. So.
Yeah. If you want authenticism, just look to Brill. Brill's authentic, you know, authentic asshole.
Here's where I don't think the transmission from the City Primeval quite made it up through the main engine of the Justified. Like I said, I think a high-ranked, up-and-coming Detroit cop could brush off, like, some asshole detective from Miami or some police officer from Miami that's out of town, kind of, you know. I don't know exactly what the setup for City Primeval, but in no way do I think a detective from Detroit Police Age would tell a marshal, yeah, I cooked the books and I fabricated evidence on this case involving the murder of a federal judge. What are you going to do about it, Marshal? That seems insane.
Does she say that directly? I didn't think she said anything direct. I think she just simply dismissed him, like said, thank you for all your help. Oh, right, knowing and getting an admission of guilt, I think, are two very different things, though.
I'm just still saying, like, it felt like it was pretty blatant, which read to me that, like, the Mo and whoever's controlling her are getting desperate or getting scared, which, again, I would love to know who was actually at the top of this pulling the strings.
Well, she knew, but, as soon as she did this, she knew the consequences of it, right? Like bringing Daryl Woods in and arresting him is an obvious tell that she's dirty. Raylan's not going to not notice that.
But, you know, she could have tried, like, because Raylan all but said, like, look, tell me, what's the thing that makes this play make sense, you know? Mm-hmm. And she just looks at him stone cold and says, thank you for your service, Marshall, fuck off. And, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I thought it would have been interesting if she could have tried. Like, because the other thing is, like, Raylan didn't know what prints were on that gun. So she could have just said, I don't have to tell you, Raylan. This is what the ballistics came back at. This is what the prints came back at. He was there at the crime scene. He's on PCP.
Yeah.
I think she could have made a good case. It's like, does this really make more sense than the fucking wild man from Oklahoma getting, like, you know, dropping out of the sky and fucking up the judge? That there's just some crazy asshole at the park that the judge got in a confrontation with and shot them both?
Yeah.
No, they know, because there's a 4.5-mile gap between the judge dying and the girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she got chased through the park.
I think she could have done a song and dance to avoid the suspicion of a federal agent. Maybe.
I don't know. I think she put up a stone wall, and now it's on Raylan to prove it. And I don't know how he does that.
Do you think she thought that Raylan would just be like, you know what, fuck this, I'm not taking on Detroit, I'm just going to go home to my daughter, like, yeah.
I think that might be her hope, certainly.
She suggested it, that was certainly her, like, yeah, I guess you can go home and see your daughter now, so.
Yeah, there's almost a threat there, too, you know?
Oh, wow.
Because she tells him to go back to Florida, she doesn't suggest, you know, right. She's not like, oh, wouldn't it be nice to go see your daughter or whatever now. She's like, go home and be with
your
daughter.
Are you saying she was implying that there is a threat to his daughter, or just
no,
like something
to,
bad's
to
gonna
him.
Happen to
like,
you? Okay.
Yeah, you stick around here, you might end up, I don't know, dead, who knows. But that's the thing, you know, people are not as scared of Raylan as maybe they should be, you know, based on him, the character that he is, but also his status within law enforcement. Like,
yeah,
the Albanians don't give a shit. The Albanians pick him up, tell him to give them his gun, and if he doesn't, there's the implication. And I think they'll follow through that he's just a dead man here. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
Albanians aren't scared of the feds either. Anyway, let's go over to Clem waking up to find Sandy has left and taken his book. Del Weems has the misfortune of arriving just then. It's kind of a thing in this show of people waking up to an empty bed, isn't it? I mean, we've seen it.
It's been this episode.
Five, six, seven, I don't know how many times. It's been Raylan, it's been Carolyn, it's been Clem, it's been everybody. We'll come back to that in a second, but we talked about the Daryl Wood stuff, so I'm not going to really go into it. There's an interrogation,
also, like,
and then
it was funny that Dell finally showed up, because we've been saying this, like, God, when is this guy going to come back from his retreat? When he's come back from his retreat, Sandy name checked him, like, he's going to get back this weekend, and he just shows up, and I don't know what I expected Dell to look like, but this is a very satisfying version of Dell. Like, when Schrodinger's Dell came through, I'm like, yeah, that's a Dell. That's a Dell Weems.
All right. Yeah.
And he's just, like, perplexed. That's my kimono. Like, the idea that he was in any kind of danger.
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand people. Like, I know I'm hypervigilant. I've had a therapist tell me so. But I can't believe to be so under vigilant that you walk in and you see a dude in tidy whities in a kimono that looks like fucking Guile from Street Fighter. You don't know this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in your living room, and you're just like, yo, dude, that's my kimono. Like, has this guy never been punched in the face? Has he never walked down a dark alley at night? What must it feel like to have no fear?
Yeah, the invasion of privacy, or not privacy there, the personal space, right, is such an obvious thing. It should set off alarm bells, but I don't know.
Just run, dude. That's a proper response to that, man.
Yeah, turn around, call the cops.
He had to notice his car, which has either been towed and impounded, or it's been wrecked and stove in. Like,
oh, I don't know. He probably Ubered from the airport or something.
Yeah. He's anxious to get back to Sandy.
Yeah. Speaking of Sandy, she goes to her gate at the airport, and she gets a call from Clem, who tells her to come back with his money or he'll hunt her down. And she has a decision to make at the end of this scene.
She should have left for Nassau. It would have killed Dell, but you know what? Dell died anyway.
Yep. Wouldn't have changed the thing for Dell.
She still, even though she maximally estimates him, like in that little speech she gave to Raylan, I don't care if he's paralyzed. I don't care if he was in. I would still not, because she's that scared of him. But she still doesn't quite estimate him properly. Like, she thinks there's a move that she can make where her and Dell get out of this alive.
Making that move here. I think, like, her best bet now is to rely on Raylan, right? Because she's been caught. Clem knows that she's leaving, and he says here in this scene he will hunt her down if she doesn't come back. And I don't think she can go back at this point. Because, like you said, I think it's over,
so
right?
So when,
like,
did Raylan get there, I guess? That's the question.
Must be
the
between...
plane's boarding here.
Yeah, between now and then. I want to say he gets there before the plane leaves, but it seems almost impossible.
That's what I'm saying. It seems like she made the decision to stop and back a Raylan play rather than run.
Maybe she called Raylan or something. I don't know.
If she makes it to the Bahamas, do you think Clem's able to track her down?
Probably not. I mean, Clem isn't some, you know, organized crime boss. He's just a dude.
Honestly, without the apparatus of the entire legal system of Detroit City, I don't know that he can do jack shit. Because, like, they are just Mr. President get downing him on bullet after bullet that he's supposed to be taking. So.
Mm-hmm. Raylan is stewing out in his car when Douche Cop knocks on his window. Brill. Let's get there. Brill knocks on his window and redeems himself as much as possible by dropping the gun in Raylan's lap and telling him that he knows Daryl is innocent.
AKA not redeeming himself.
yeah, not totally.
But he's like saying fully 25% of the people in prison he's put away on fabricated charges. But mm-hmm. it's okay, because he know they did the stuff that deserves it.
They did something, yeah. They might not have done the thing that I put on them, but they did something.
Brill's the dude that he hears the rather let 100 men innocent, or let 100 guilty men go free than convict one innocent person, just scoffs.
Yeah, he's the other way around. I'd rather let one innocent man go free and put away 100 other innocent men. I don't know.
I notice in this, yeah, I'd rather put 100 innocent men away than one guilty mother, a really guilty mother, you know, a really guilty mother, if I can go free.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought the music in this episode was an improvement. Like, for whatever reason, they really unleashed the bluegrass. Like, mm-hmm. that, it's definitely when, like when Raylan's stewing, it's, like, in full effect. I really like the Raylan, that kind of grim smile he has. It kind of like him doing the moral calculus on Brill and getting a result that he's happy with. I thought that was pretty. That's funny.
Yeah, he's thinking it. Like, he's still an asshole, but I guess you know. I'm glad for him.
Yeah, I don't know. Ever since like Sweetie died, it's like the bluegrass is winning the battle in the soundtrack, and I think that's a good thing on this show.
I do too. Like, we're in Detroit, but I'd still want it to feel like Justified, and that's a big part of what
Raylan
show.
It's not Detroit show. Raylan, yeah. He's bringing the bluegrass with him. He's bringing the bluegrass and the bourbon with him.
Uh-huh. So Clem's about to do bad things to Del when Sandy calls and apologizes. Clem tells her to meet him at the Radisson by the airport. Raylan is standing next to her. He's the one who had her call, I guess, and says he's got it from here, asks for her phone, and then Clem kills Del anyway.
That's what you do, man. You this guy invented an app, multimillionaire, renting a swanky loft condo overlooking Detroit's finest casino, mm-hmm. and he goes simping for this dirty blonde, and he gets his brains blown out. Don't do it, guys. Don't do it.
Yeah. I think it's funny when Sandy, you know, is handing over her phone and says, "Can I at least delete some pictures first?"
Yeah.
Probably some stuff in there she wants to keep private. Why
take
her
phone?
Another
thing that Raylan will roll his eyes like, you don't want me to see your titties, but it's okay that I know you're just a morally bankrupt person.
Sure.
There's something really funny about that thing, that aspect of it too.
Why does he take her phone? That doesn't come back this episode. Is it going to?
I think
it's
just he's going to have to interface with Clem. So if at this point in time Clem tries to call her, he doesn't want anyone shit getting away his shit.
Okay.
How I read
that makes sense.
Because you're right, and they never actually do anything with that. But maybe that's going to turn the tide next episode.
I was wondering if he still had that on him, because they don't search Raylan or anything. They just ask for his gun and he hands it over. So
yeah, he's probably got a cell phone. Although I also wouldn't be surprised if they took it from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. But it could just be he doesn't want her calling Clem and.
Yeah, the first
time
I watched this scene, I was like, Jesus, Sandy, you are such a fucking idiot. I thought Clem was an idiot believing you on the, but like, you are an all time. But then, like, they, and it's so funny because they keep on, a lot of these conversations they do, there's a slow, like, rotation of the camera as mm-hmm. they're going back and forth from Clem. And then, like, by the end of it, it rotates around and there's Raylan there. It's like, oh, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, she's jumping to the Raylan tree to try and avoid the flood here.
Mm-hmm. It's a tall, tall tree to climb when the flood waters are rising.
Yep. Raylan calls Carolyn to tell her that he's meeting Clem, and she tries to convince him not to go or to, you know, like just delay a little bit, but he's set on it. And then we see the Albanians in her office and we understand. Ah, okay. So she told them where Clem's going to be so they can get revenge. She doesn't want Raylan to be there when it happens. So she's trying to get him to... She's trying to keep him from being there because it's going to get ugly.
she's not exactly selling him down the river, but
no.
Like, if he's on the river when it floods, it's to extend the metaphor, then that's okay with her.
Yeah, which she's trying to get him out of the way, right? Like,
come back
and have a drink with me, you know?
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I'm meeting this murderer at a hotel bar for a rendezvous where I'm going to shoot him. Well, do you want to get a drink first, cowboy? No, I'm Raylan Givens. The only thing I like more than sex is blowing some guilty motherfucker's brains out. Like, come on. That wasn't a real try.
Well, there's so much implied there. I mean, she's not asking him to come get a drink. She doesn't give a shit about the drink. She's trying to warn him.
I know. What is she?
She's trying to warn him without saying the Albanians are coming because I just told them, right?
So you think this is such a crazy tone deaf offer that Raylan was
supposed to
be up,
like,
something's wrong.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't.
No.
I think you're right. That actually
he should have, but.
But she says it's shaky okay, but when she says okay, I think she knows that Raylan's in mortal danger and she's not going to to otherwise warn him.
No. No, I think you're right. She could have called him after the Albanians left, but puts her in extreme danger.
Well, I think the implication is since they were in, what was his name, Thomas, the Albanians' office there at the nursing home, that she went to them. I feel like if this was some kind of duress situation where they rolled up on her tough with guns, it would be at her office or her home. So maybe it's
possible.
That's what I'm saying. It's what breaks my heart is it feels like it was something that she. Like, I don't want Raylan to die, but like I'm also okay if this is what settles the hash once and for all.
It could also be that they just grabbed her up and forced her to make this call. Like took her back to their office, forced her to make this call, find out where Clem's going to be, and so she's still trying to warn him. Because I really feel like it's a warning, saying, "Hey, why don't you just come back and have a drink."
I actually am, you've swayed me to that side, but it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, she doesn't want Raylan to die, but she wants vengeance for her dad and for her own misspent life.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck your mother, fuck you. I'm going to the Albanians, tell them where you'll be.
Yeah, I mean, she gave Raylan, but the thing is like, that's what it is. She had this whole thing about trusting Raylan and how does he know this is so important to her? She trusted Raylan. She gave him the gun and Raylan fumbled the ball. So I guess from her perspective, yeah.
Because he trusted the cops.
Yeah. And to get vengeance for her father. Yeah, I can see it. I can see it. Like I said, I don't think she wants Raylan to die. She's okay with that being a possibility. Maybe she also thinks Raylan's badass enough that he can take care of himself.
Maybe we'll see. Maybe that pink rhinestone phone will come in handy next episode. Anyway, let's go to the final scene here, or series of scenes, I guess. Raylan arrives at the Radisson bar and finds Clem waiting. He sits down, orders Clem another drink, puts the gun in front of him, and tells him to draw anytime he wants. Then the Albanian. Let's stay there for a second. I really love this scene. This is the kind of scene that I just, it's so justified. It's so Raylan. And Clem is an excellent opponent in this scene too. Cause he's not an idiot. He's not, he knows what it means if he tries to draw, right? He's probably dead. And if he's not dead, his prints are on this gun. So
and
of course
he's
not going to do it.
Marshall in plain view. Like there's at least a bartender back then. I don't know. He might maybe murders a bartender, but yeah, he's there's a nationwide manhunt on this guy.
So he's not dumb enough to do it, but he's also kind of in a pickle because Raylan's not going away.
I want to ask you. So where, as I got some opinions on this, but I want to know where are you at on Clem's inner state of mind when he's staring at that bag with the gun in it?
His interstate of, what's he thinking? He's probably thinking, that's my gun. He wouldn't be here trying to do this if he had anything on me, is the other thing, right? Like, if he could actually pin me to the wall with the prints on this gun, he'd do that. So he doesn't have me, but I can't really get out of this situation without some miracle.
See, this scene reminded me, you remember in Tombstone, when Johnny Ringo shows up that dry gulch expecting to kill Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday has shown up in his place. And, you know, Holiday's like, we never got to finish that game we started up, that game for blood, remember? And he's like, oh, I was just fooling around, Doc. And Doc's like, I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I thought the scene felt like to me. Like, yeah, this guy's
when he
talking
was threatening
mad
him.
Shit when Raylan's mm-hmm. within his official police capacity, all these people surrounding him. And now he's looking across because Raylan does not give a fuck. His face is like etched in granite. He's just like, doesn't even care. Like, mm-hmm. whatever you do, I'm ready for you, boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Clem is scared. He doesn't want any of this smoke suddenly.
Yeah. Yeah, this is his worst nightmare, but he brought it on himself. He's such an idiot, right?
Yeah. But then, like, what's got to be going through Raylan's head when the Albanians show up? Like, talk about how supernatural this guy's luck. Uh-huh. He's about, like, he is... Yeah, but although I think you're kind of right, if Clem just like, you know what, fuck you, I'm not playing this game, gets up and leaves, I don't know what Raylan does.
He doesn't drop it, for sure. He's still coming at him. It's just a matter of like,
he
okay,
doesn't
what's
shoot
the
him
angle?
In the back.
Like, no, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, how does he get him after that?
I don't know,
man. But yeah, the Albanians show up. They drive both of them out to a bridge and they toss the murder weapon over and continue driving. That's kind of the end of the episode here. It's a cliffhanger. Is this the same bridge that Sandy didn't dump the gun over? I don't think so.
I thought it looked
the irony of it.
Exactly. I thought it looked exactly, and I thought that irony. Although it did make me think of, like, why does Detroit Police Department just sweep this bridge? Just have drivers every morning.
Yeah.
Divers, rather, every morning. Just go down to some metal detectors, and you'd probably instantly increase the clearance rate because this is just the murder gun bridge.
Maybe
you know, like
so.
There's that one bridge in Paris. Everybody locks the locks with their names carved on it. Uh-huh, that's this is the murder gun bridge. You just go there. If you had a murder gun, you throw it over.
Yeah, they do. Every other week, they dredge this thing out looking for guns.
Right.
Yeah, man, it's such a 1-2 punch here because, like, the irony of the gun going over now when it was supposed to go over forever ago, and there goes the evidence to put Clem away, right? Like, if the prints were on the gun before, and you can see it in Raylan's eyes when he sees it go over, and he's just like, God damn it. That's it. There it goes.
Yeah, and this also shows you this the difference in, like, seriousness of people. Like, you know, Clem's just some asshole from Oklahoma, and Raylan's a dude from Harlan. Harlan's a dangerous place. This guy's talking about, I think, mm-hmm. the Kosovo conflict.
Oh, okay.
Where ethnic Albanians were getting, you know, like, getting opposed by this big fight between them and the Serbs. And I, like I said, I was just like 12, 13 when all this was happening. But, like, you know, he's talking about dozens of people dying in bombings and shootings mm-hmm. and, like, what a relatively paradise it is when he comes to, and he's talking about Detroit, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's just a different level of hardness than these others. And, like, I don't think Clem's aware of it because he's, like, smirking in the back. Like, when this guy throws his gun away, Clem's like, huh. Fuck you, Raylan. What does Clem know that I don't know? Because, like...
Nothing. He knows less than you know. He's an idiot.
He thinks it's funny that Raylan's kind of humiliated. Because you're going to die screaming naked in about 30 minutes is what I would predict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you're going to start the screaming in the naked part, and so you probably die a couple hours later, but...
Right. He might just think his luck is that good, right? Like, he thinks he's untouchable. He really does. And even in these situations, he still feels like that.
I mean, that's the thing. He is a likable asshole. And sometimes that makes me think he's maybe more clever than he is. But because, yeah, I'm like, I don't know if this show's telling me that he's anything but just, for some reason, getting all this benevolent treatment by the Detroit Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's gotta be something that goes beyond just the book of it all, right? Like,
maybe I don't know.
That they implied that the Wrecking Crew was like, or was that just Carolyn being a good lawyer?
What about the Wrecking Crew?
Well, I'm trying to think. It's because, like, there's this mystique about, even before the Judge case with the Oklahoma Wild Man, that he's just, like, supernaturally able to get off of cases. And mm-hmm. they talk about the Wrecking Crew case, and I think you're supposed to understand that Carolyn is just a really good lawyer for that one. But maybe ever since something, like Raylan said, there's some combination of the book and this guy that's got everybody acting weird. I think that the all of the official justice apparatus of Detroit is mm-hmm. bent towards protecting Clem, because they're just desperate to get the book back. Once they get the book in their custody, it's probably fuck this guy, but nobody's totally. Taking him down until they get that secured.
Uh huh.
Because they sure as hell don't want the U.S. Marshal Services getting their hand on it.
Right. Who has the book at the moment? Because Sandy took it.
Sandy's...
It must be Raylan or some law enforcement, right? I mean, Raylan probably has the book on him, if I had to guess.
Unless he gives it to Wendell?
Sure, but God, that's then the timing of the airport thing. She must have been waiting for hours in that airport for him. Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, how long does it take Clem to get? Because it's daylight.
I guess, she gives it to him. She must give it to him, right? There's no way Sandy still has the book on her.
Where is Sandy?
Still at the airport for all I know, but...
Was she in custody?
Who's going to take her into custody? The cops are dirty. Brill, maybe? He'll trust Brill to take her in?
Oh, the other thing is, like, I don't think that anyone knows what Raylan's doing. He stole a gun out of evidence. Although him having the gun... No, Brill gives the gun. Okay, Brill gives him the gun.
So
it's daylight when Dell gets his brains blown out. It's nighttime when he's at the Radisson. Did we just have a few hours where Raylan's able to kind of set things up?
We might have, yeah. I can
but
see Wendell.
How does Raylan know
having
that?
Sandy in custody? I think he would trust Wendell still.
I think that's where I'm arriving at. He doesn't. Brill's an asshole and he doesn't respect his police work. Mo is corrupt. Wendell is the guy he thinks he can trust.
Yeah.
Which I hope makes sense. I really like Wendell.
Me too. Yeah, he didn't seem dirty, but he shut down that conversation about dirty cops pretty fast. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I feel like shitty bunk fan fiction if he turns out to be, or I guess hater fiction if he turns out to be a bent cop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I like the way. That Raylan, so it's a little weird because the scene prior to this, Raylan seems like he's ready to draw down on Clem and blow him away if Clem grabs this gun. And in this scene, he's trying to appeal to the Albanian, saying, we got the evidence. I got the goods on him. I'm about to put him away for multiple decades. Let me just have this one.
But
that
he
didn't
knows.
Seem like his disposition in the previous scene.
Especially since he doesn't have the prince he doesn't think he has the prince, which is again something I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that, but
I don't know if any
but the
of
thing
that
is,
stuff
he,
actually
he
makes
already
sense,
had this
but...
conversation with Tomo in much better circumstances when he was not in their custody and when he was with another police officer and at their place of business, and Tomo essentially said, well, if I find him first, he's going to get split in half like a old piece of seasoned kitten firewood. And I don't know why Raylan's trying. I don't know. It feels pathetic and weak for him to try to, like, oh, just let me put him in jail, man.
Yeah. Especially because that's not what he was doing in the previous scene.
If I was Raylan, I'd be worried about getting out of there alive. Do you think he thinks he's in danger?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too.
Okay, let me try and make sense of this here.
Okay, and I also have a bomb theory that I want to not forget to talk about.
In the previous scene, the gun isn't loaded. Mm-hmm. Would that change the calculus here? Because if he can get Clem to grab this gun and try and draw on him, he gets his prints on the thing, and there will be no bullets in the weapon, so he won't be able to fire it, and Raylan doesn't intend to shoot him.
He says, I don't want your confession because it'll be under, like, there's got to be a camera in that bar. Like, they're going to get this guy pulling on Raylan and he's got the prints, and they're like, well, that's but I guess it's a crime. You could put someone away for trying to killing a federal officer. That's a crime. That's a crime that probably carries a life sentence in jail, right?
Sure. So what you're saying is they couldn't then connect him to the Wrecking Crew or the judge murders
because
they
care. Because all Raylan wants to do is get him off the street, and trying to kill a federal officer is one way to do that. But again, there's so much splaining you'd have to do. Like, you know, like either you got to say, hey, I stole this from your evidence locker, or some asshole dropped it off. But like, yeah, there's just a lot. Like I said, I'd love to see the police report.
And there's some explaining that the show would have to do, too, because they very much in that scene said he wanted to kill Clem. They would have to retroactively, like, show us that there were no bullets in that gun or something, but the gun is gone, so I don't know how they're going to do that unless they flash back to 20 minutes ago.
Is it possible while Wendell switched, got the book, you know, he got the book from Sandy and Raylan and their meeting, hypothetically, mm-hmm. Is it possible they switched out the gun? I think it's interesting that, like, they made a big point of telling us that this is a replica. This isn't a this isn't some gun that some guy's grandfather beat a German to death and took it off his body, and it's like an heirloom. And this is just some replica weapon. Is it possible they switched it, and that, like, Raylan is confident that the prints are on it, and he's still got the original tucked away someplace safe with Wendell, and this is just another replica that they threw out?
Yeah, what does that get him?
I mean, if Raylan is confident that the prints are on it, it allows... Yeah, I don't know what it gets Raylan if his original strategy of the guy shooting him doesn't pan out.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that gets him. If he's got the prints, just go use the prints, you know, make this a federal case.
You're listening to the Justified Podcast. We'll be right back.
Howdy, Deputy. We're back with the Justified Podcast.
But allow him to kill Brill, and if it's not the actual gun in the evidence room, that would, like, tie that off nice too, because it's just it's similar, but it's not the same. And this guy just showed up with a gun and tried to kill me, and I drew and is justified. No one needs to know maybe. It came out of a paper bag on the paper. But again, if they have on video, I don't know, because, like, sometimes I don't know, like, if the show, like, you know, because it's possible shows just make mistakes. Because, like, whenever I see it's now in 2023, it's like, where do you commit a crime?
Yeah.
That you are not going to be caught within a block or two of the location on some kind of camera. It's usually police sloth that let so many criminals go free than it is like, oh, it's just impossible to solve these crimes.
Yeah, or I guess you gotta be out sloth, in like Harlan, Kentucky or something, right?
Misallocation of resources. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out, like, where is this going to go other than Raylan to shooting the guy?
Yeah, and I mean, now that the Albanians have him, how he gets out of this, I can't see it. I really can't see it. No one, aside from Carolyn, I mean, Carolyn knows that the Albanians probably have him. She knows where the Albanians live. She could have a change of heart and try and get the dirty ass cops to come in and save him. Maureen doesn't want to do that. I guess Brill, Wendell, maybe.
It'd be better for everyone if Raylan dies, honestly.
Yeah, for Maureen especially.
Or for Team Judge's Black Book, anyway.
And yeah, that whole team. I don't know, man.
All right, you're ready to consider feedback, because we got some good stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes, but let's get into feedback.
Justified@baldmove.com is how you send feedback. So we talked about, we just talked about the odds of Raylan killing Clem. I'm putting a metaphorical gun to your head, Jim, and I'm saying right now, how many big bads of each, like, what's the percentage of big bads in each season of Justified that Raylan has shot himself?
So I guess it depends on what you mean when you say big bad. Does Boone count as a big bad, even though he's working for somebody else who was the bigger bad, or, you know, that kind of thing? But let's say it's, I know this is a trick question. I'm going to go with what I think is low, and I'm going to say 60%.
Mike from Orange County has done the math, and here it is. In your discussion in the latest episode about whether Raylan will kill Clement, made me realize something I never considered before, which is Raylan never kills the big bad. And season one doesn't have his season-long big bad, but Bo Crowder assumes the role in the latter half of the season. He's killed by the Miami cartel. And season two, Mags Bennett, of course, offs herself. Mm-hmm. Season three, Robert Quarles is shot by Errol and his arms chopped off by Limehouse. Season four, again, doesn't have a big season, full season big bad, but Nikki Augustine is the closest thing to it. And while Raylan does arrange his death, he doesn't pull the trigger himself. Season five, Daryl Crow Jr. is killed by Sister Wendy. In season six, Avery Markham's killed by Boyd. Boyd, of course, is arrested, but not killed by Raylan. So if Raylan ultimately does take out Clement Mansell by his own hand, City Primeval will be breaking new ground. And I additionally wondered how many major characters of any sort has Raylan killed. After a quick visit to the Justified Wiki, here's a complete list of the characters who appeared in more than two episodes that were killed by Raylan. Coover Bennett. He was in seven episodes of season two. Choo-choo. Can't forget Choo-choo.
Appeared in four episodes in
season six. He's the kind of dude that they called, like, he was like a big kind of dumb dude that they called Choo-choo. One
okay.
of the goons that was
I
like
thought Hoover Bennett was the big dumb dude. But
well, he wasn't a good dude. I thought Choo-choo kind of was. He appeared in four episodes in season six. Ty Walker appears in eight episodes in season six. And of course, Boone, I think that's one we recency bias, appeared in five episodes in season mm-hmm. six. So almost all of Raylan's kills in Justified were one-offs except for the final season.
Huh.
That is shocking.
Yeah. It's not how I remember it, but I trust you. I believe you're right.
Yeah. Like, if you got evidence, but like all the main big bads, this checks completely out. And like
so maybe
I said,
he
Boone,
can make up for it in this season and kill, let's see, Maureen and Clem, maybe Toma. I don't know who else he'd have to kill to make up for it.
Yeah. All everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Mo, the person Mo works for.
Yeah,
so anyway, I appreciate you doing the math on that, because I would have bet a lot of money that is about 50% is what I was going to guess. But Tyler says Trinnell was told by, so this is the thing we goofed up. Trinnell was told by the attorney to take the gun and hide it in the last episode, not to let Clem or Sweetie know where it's at. The gun in the bar when Lonnie walks in is not the same as hidden. A couple people wrote in to tell us that Tyler was the first. I want to give you credit for that. Thank you for pointing that out. I wondered about the gun that Clem's got. I thought it looked very similar to Raylan's SIG. And I wondered if he was kind of like unconsciously aping him. And Mike says, in reference to Clem's gun, it appears to be a SIG 226 or 229, which would track with one of the guns in Skinder's safe when Clem tried shaking him down. So he, this is Skinder's gun. Raylan also carried a Glock, or has carried a Glock 17 9mm for the bulk of the series, except for the pilot episode where he had a SIG 226, where he draws down on the Miami gangster in the opening scene. Hmm. Perhaps this is an intentional callback for the showrunners, or just a coincidence. Mm-hmm. I bet it's an intentional callback, just the way they had Boone wear a businessman Stetson, to kind of like, you know, lampshade the fact that Raylan's wearing the wrong hat, according to Elmore Leonard. I bet it is a sly nod to the series premiere. But anyway, I thought that was cool. Thanks for connecting that dots for us. John says, the guy in season three who did the ice pick through the hand thing was Fletcher Ice Pick Nix, played by Desmond Harrington, who is an associate of Quarles, but not Quarles himself. It's exactly. The gun that Clem used to silence Sweetie for good was Lol Garages from the safe in the Panic Sexy Times room. Yep. The season has been a classic slow burn of the fuse. I cannot wait for the fire in the hole, followed by the big boom of a shootout. The show has done an amazing job of edging us all for the classic Raylan gun down and then shying away from it, so the release when it comes will be sweet. Although, it seems to be the Raylan's a bit of a gun tease, you know, when it comes down to these finales.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like he's got to face off against Clem, but knowing the stats now that I do, there's no guarantee of that. In fact, it's less likely that he draws on Clem.
Do you think they'll play You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive, even though it's Detroit? And which would you prefer? Because to me, that's Justified. Season Justified is not over until they fire up You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive.
I agree. And the synopsis, the IMDb synopsis, is two lines for the next episode, the finale. It says Raylan attempts to make it out of Detroit alive. So, yeah, I think so. And I'm with you. It won't feel like Justified unless I get some hint of that theme.
I'd rather, maybe they can just play the instrumental so they don't have the obvious lyrical callback. Because it will be weird. You never leave Harlan alive when you're talking about Detroit. But RCM says, how does ripping a page out of a blackmail book make the person being blackmailed feel any way secure? I mean, you can scan or take an image of the page, and even if you don't, that knowledge is still out there. I don't know. At times, I'm just barreling along with the plot, and every once in a while, when I see Clement or Sweetie rip out a page and hand it to the victim, I'm like, what? Is that persuasive to you?
I don't know. In court, I think it would be a lot less persuasive to have a photocopy of some page that might have existed at some point than the actual page in the book.
Now, I think RCM's onto something with enough witnesses, other indirect evidence, and the copies. But like, there's a reason that people take like originals of contracts and shit really serious, because that shit now in 2023... with the shit that Adobe Photoshop can do out of the box, I think all of this, like we are a society of a house of cards built on trust that isn't real anymore.
And that is rapidly being shown for what it is, you know.
It hasn't been real for 10 years and we just haven't realized. We thought our doors are locked, but we've been unlocking them. We've been going to sleep with them unlocked, and I don't know what happens in society, but like, yeah, I do think having the originals gives people quite a bit of peace of mind. Especially when he's talking about a physical book and not like if it's like a USB drive, then yeah, I'd be like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Let me take out my laptop and I'll delete the file. But a real physical book, they might have something there. He also has another problem. How do you go in for the arrest when nothing else has been exchanged? Raylan would have to know that makes about as much sense as well. Ripping a page out of the blackmail book. It also seemed like there was more than one name on some of those pages. Anyway, all the best. I think that the idea is this guy physically threatened a court officer and offered money in exchange to blackmail her. And if you show up and he's got a deadly weapon and he actually has the blackmail on him, then you've just got him.
Oh, yeah.
Not on the other charges, but these are charges enough that you can just take him into custody and it's a done deal. And when he doesn't have a gun and he doesn't have the black, he's just some dude talking about money and, you know, making a casual threat against a person. He doesn't even know she's a lawyer or something, right? You think that's the correct analysis?
I think that's the size of it. And when he goes up to her, I don't recall him saying anything that directly implicates him in like, I was the guy you spoke to on the phone, but I'm not sure about that.
And he also, like, I think it's a credible threat when he says, you're underestimating my willingness to put my hands on you in front of all these people.
Does he say that?
To me, the thing is like, at best, that's literally simple assault. Like, threatening someone in most jurisdictions, everything's different. Before you go threatening to beat people up or beating people up, consult your own fucking lawyer. But most jurisdictions, simple assault is just saying, I'm going to kick your ass. Doesn't have to be, it's just like, just... that's an assault. A verbal threat is considered an assault. But the thing is like, he probably won't even be like detained for that.
Right. That's the thing. They don't just want to send him to jail for the week. They want to send him to prison for life.
He will be arrested, probably released that same day or the next day when the judge, I think he's got a prior record, but like, yeah, that's not going to do anything but piss him off, probably, legally speaking. So, I felt like it was a pretty well filmed scene. How you feel about the level of trust and we have in copies and originals of society. Finally, we kind of already talked about this. This is a little bit of dry pie, but I'll give credit to therapist Tom. He essentially said that the series has been kind of Raylan's going from being the angriest man to just merely the stubbornest man. Mm-hmm. A big part of Raylan's arc was him no longer being driven by rage. My big question was, what does Marshall Raylan look like without the anger being his driving force? As far as I can tell, Timothy's playing it super well. He seems a little bit more zen. He doesn't seem as driven by anger, but he does remain highly motivated and dedicated to his job. My prediction is the growing frustration with this case getting jerked around from people with power and a possible daughter napping might bring back out the angry, old angry Raylan, and when it happens, he might shoot everyone in Detroit.
I think that's the story they told this episode. He's pissed about the Maureen stuff.
pissed enough to shoot. Yeah, I guess like when you're dealing this much injustice, that's another way that you can like, well, what is it? You know, it's like, okay, well, maybe we don't like Raylan being as loose cannon as he is, but also he's not dirty. I don't know, because like I thought sure they were going to get the daughter back in.
Yeah. I mean, threatening his family would be a great way to piss him off, but I don't see it. I still don't see it in this final episode. I just don't see the path to it in one more episode.
Yeah, especially although this was a very short episode. I don't know if we got the runtime confirmed for the next episode, but this was only like a 40-minute episode. So maybe it'll be an extra. Because it does. That's the thing is like it doesn't take a whole episode to dash down to Miami and kidnap his daughter, right? It's like it's a damn near 24-hour drive. But he does it. He's the wild man, and then he just got he's got Raylan on the phone, and he's like, "I got your." But then, how does that work? Then Raylan's got to drive down there. Does she come back to Detroit? That's the only way this works is if she loses her mind and comes back to Detroit to patch things up with her dad without telling him.
Like, I don't even see how he gets out of this car is the problem. Like, let alone down to Florida into Raylan's house and like.
It's too much.
He doesn't know where Raylan lives. He's going to go to Winona's house. Does he know that he was ever married? Does he know where Winona lives and who she is? None of that would track. So I really don't see a path there. I don't even see a path out of this SUV for him.
Yeah.
But clearly it has to happen. We've got a whole episode to go and it can't be Clem and Raylan getting tortured by the Albanians for 45 minutes.
He would think. That's all the email we got. Justified@baldmove.com. If you got thoughts going into the finale episode or on the finale episode, I'm not sure. We haven't scheduled out about whether we'll do a wrap up on Justified. I guess it depends on how much feedback we get and how mind blowing the finale is. But we will be back next week for that. Justified@baldmove.com. If you want to know what else we're covering, because man, we're doing so much stuff right now. We just started Ahsoka. We're starting Ahsoka this week. The new Star Wars show from Disney Plus. We're still doing Foundation over at Apple TV Plus, which is a fantastic series. We're about to start Daryl from The Walking Dead spinoff, which is Daryl from The Walking Dead spinoff. We got Loki. Going to be heavy on Disney and Marvel stuff. Check us out. All the social media is at Bald Move, except for TikTok. We're at Baldest Move there. And finally, if you'd like to support us and get a little bit extra for yourself, maybe ditch the ads, get ad-free feed, get some extra bonus digital audio content. Check us out at support.baldmove.com. Thanks for listening here to our Justified podcast. We'll be back next week for the thrilling conclusion of the Judge Guy Albanian Oklahoma Wildman saga of Justified. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.